you, New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Severson. Looks like the ceasefire in Gaza is over, at least temporarily, because Israel is ramping up attacks all over Gaza by its air force. Because, says Prime Minister Netanyahu, Hamas has refused to release hostages and rejected all offers at talks in Qatar. A federal judge demands written answers to his questions from Justice Department lawyers at a Washington hearing today. This over Judge James Boasberg ordering a stop Saturday to the weekend deportation of what the administration calls dangerous Venezuelan criminal gang members. They were flown to El Salvador. Of the judge's order, White House official Stephen Miller.
To put the lives in danger of the Homeland Security personnel on those aircraft.
ACLU lawyers suing over the Trump claims of authority under a 1798 Alien Enemies Act. A federal appeals court has denied a request from the Trump administration to temporarily stop a court order that required reinstatement of thousands of government employees. This is ABC News. Not stopping?
The U.S. airstrikes against the Iranian-backed Houthis in Yemen have killed more than 50 people and continue, according to top Pentagon spokesperson Sean Parnell.
These actions by the Houthis will not be tolerated.
Since October 2023, the Houthis have attacked more than 100 vessels in the Red Sea, one of the world's most vital shipping routes. President Trump vows the attacks will continue until the Houthis pledge to stop. Christiane Cordero, ABC News, Washington.
A voluntary recall of 75,000 bottles of International Delight coffee creamer across 31 states after illnesses were reported. The affected items are Cinnabon Classic Cinnamon Roll and Hazelnut Coffee Creamers with best buy dates in early July. Hot Springs, Arkansas held its annual world's shortest St. Patrick's Day parade with 40 floats on a 98-foot route downtown. The actress Valerie Bertinelli, rap icon Flavor Flav, celebrity guests. Chuck Severson, ABC News.
Celebrate the women who have helped shape the world as we honor Women's History Month with powerful stories of Wisconsin's own. We recognize the groundbreaking achievements of Elizabeth Bayard. She defied the odds to become the first female journalist in Northeast Wisconsin. It was the mid-1800s. Bayard was considered a trusted voice as she wrote about the developing area of the territory known as Green Bay. Her reporting revealed the stories of women and families, offering a fresh perspective in a male-dominated press at that time. Perseverance, passion, and breaking barriers. Bayard is a part of Green Bay and Wisconsin history, and a symbol of the progress women continue to make every day. We recognize the powerful women from the past and those who are still writing their own history today. I'm Lisa Hale. I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WISS.FM.
March Madness is here. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the brackets are out. The Badgers play in Denver Thursday afternoon at 12:30 against Montana in the Ball Arena in Denver for the opening round of the NCAA basketball tournament. Marquette is going back to the dance. They face New Mexico Friday night in Cleveland. Head coach Shaka Smart.
This is a date that, as a basketball player or a basketball coach, you have circled on your calendar way before the season even starts. And it's something like 18% of teams end up playing in the NCAA tournament. So we don't take for granted even being in the NCAA tournament. This is really an acknowledgement today of the fact that our guys earned the right to be in the tournament, and now it's all about what we do with it.
NBA, the Bucks losing to the Thunder 121-105. Damian Lillard on how the Thunder were different than the team they beat in the NBA Cup last December.
I just think, you know, obviously they are who they are. They defend, you know, they move the ball, they got a deep team, and I just thought that we played a better game the first time.
That's Damian Lillard with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The late Gene Hackman did not mention his three children in his will, but they might still end up with some of his $80 million worth of assets. Hackman and his wife, Betsy Arakawa, passed away in late February under mysterious circumstances. Late last week, it was disclosed that Arakawa passed away from the hantavirus a week before her Oscar-winning husband. Authorities say Hackman suffered from Alzheimer's disease and couldn't take care of himself after his wife died, and as a result, passed away a week later. In Betsy's will, it was stated that she left her estate to various charities. Hackman, however, named Betsy as the recipient of his assets, essentially leaving his three now middle-aged children out in the cold, or so it would seem. As it turns out, due to Betsy's death, Hackman has no secondary beneficiaries, so it looks like his kids will be the recipient of their father's $80 million fortune after all. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your Fox Valley forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear and a low around 36. A bit breezy on your Tuesday with a high near 51 under partly sunny skies. Chance of rain Tuesday night, a low near 37. Rain for Wednesday and rain mixing with snow Wednesday night. Afternoon highs in the 40s. Right now, it's 44.
Jane Mattner and Greg Bock.
Coming up on the show, turns out Republicans aren't the only ones who don't want to hear from their constituents. Run away, run away. Join us.
Mattner on air, weekday mornings at 10.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Mattner on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day to one and all. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to give a big thanks to my first two guests for today, Jeff Kazak from the Irish Fest School of Music. You can find out more at irishfestschoolofmusic.com, as well as Corey Webster from the Irish Heritage Center in Milwaukee. Remember, you can find out more at IHCH, the Irish Heritage. Yeah, that's what it is. We'll have the correct website for both of those organizations in our show notes for today. But everybody, I was really excited to share some of my Irish history and invite all of you to do the same. So many of us here in Wisconsin do have some Irish background of some such. If you would like to share some of that, or if you've traveled to Ireland and have a particularly memorable experience that you would like to share with us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Please do join us. We got a texter from the 715 enjoying the show this afternoon. Thank you so much. Texting in on the WAUK text line. Remember, if you download the Civic Media app, you can call or text with just the push of one button. But I was very fortunate growing up to have a mom that was particularly interested in the genealogy in our family trees. I think in part because I am an only child. So without siblings, I think there was a bit of added urgency to know more about our family's background. And so I basically interviewed my mom over the weekend to ask her about our genealogy, as well as how she got interested in it. How did she go about doing genealogy, if you will? Of course, these days, you can try to hit the easy button, right? Like 23andMe, Ancestry.com. I think there's FamilyTree.com. That's certainly one way to go about doing things. But even with that, one of the best ways to find out about your own family background is to talk to your older relatives and your extended family. I think gone by the wayside are those things like big family reunions. I know some folks still do them. Seems to be harder and harder to do that these days. But listen, if you have a big family reunion every few years, get your phone out, hit record, and go ask your great-grandma, or your great-aunt on what. Sit down and ask them stories about their background, about what they may know, about their grandparents. Those oral traditions, those oral histories, are one of your greatest sources of information about your family. And you can then, of course, support and go deeper with source documents and all of that. Again, I'm going to share you a little bit of my family's background, Irish background. I invite you to do the same. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. So my Irish ancestry comes predominantly, or nearly exclusively, we think, from my mom's side of the family. Again, she was the one that did all the genealogy digging. And on that side of the family, there are two great-great-great-grandfathers that came to the United States from Ireland. So in case anybody is doing the math on Maggie Dawn's ancestry, the math is I'm about an eighth Irish. So my grandmother was half Irish. She had, her dad was full Irish. My mom, a quarter Irish. I am therefore an eighth Irish. I am a Wisconsin mutt, if you will. I mean that with love and respect. I'm also German and Polish and Serbian. And we think maybe a little Alsatian French, all kinds of fun stuff going on there. But my mom, I think, spent a lot of time and care around our Irish genealogy because that was some of the oral history that her family knew. So getting back to that, we had two different men in our family tree that came over and really started my family's beginnings in the United States. Both of them coming over before the potato famine got really bad. But in that same, like, basically build up to the peak. Now, interestingly enough, both of them came over before Ellis Island. So the first branch of my family, my great-great-great-grandfather, his name was John Hayes. And we think, a little uncertain as the year, we're thinking around like 1835 he came over. And he did not, again, go through Ellis Island, which was not yet open. We think he came through before it was like officially opened, which happened a couple of years later, but they had started to process some immigrants coming over through a place called Convent Garden. Convent Garden. This was the precursor to Ellis Island. So no, not everybody came through Ellis Island. And then my other family tree stem is a guy by the name of Hugh Hickey. So both the Hayeses and the Hickeys in my family were the Irish branches of my family. Now, John Hayes, again, we think came from County Cork, and Hugh Hickey came from County Meath, north of Dublin. County Cork and sort of the more western, central, southernish area of the country. So very fascinating, very interesting background. And on the Hickey side, we believe they may have settled and landed in both New Richmond, Wisconsin, and then on the Hayes side in Cumberland, Wisconsin. So I say I'm native, born and raised Milwaukeean, and I am, but also these branches, these original branches of my family coming and settling in different places. Brian from Milwaukee, happy St. Patrick's Day to you, sir. What would you like to comment on or share this afternoon?
Thank you. Yeah. Even though my name is Brian, I'm not Irish, but I think everyone's Irish on St. Patty's Day.
100%.
And one of the great memories I have is when I was a kid in 95, I was at my grandmother's house and she had a VHS of Riverdance. And it was the first time I've seen it. And I'd never seen anything like before. And that weekend, I probably watched that VHS tape probably like 20 times. And before I left her house, she's like, "So you're going to bust a move?" And I'm like, "What do you mean?" "Well, you've seen that video enough that you should know how to do it by now."
it's fun to even fake it, you know. It gets you going.
And one of the greatest joys I had was right before COVID, they had their 25th anniversary world tour going on, but COVID hit. And they had to cancel all of their Wisconsin appearances. But what they did instead was they recorded the 25th anniversary at Point Theater in Dublin, where it all started. And they re-released that in cinemas the weekend of St. Paddy's Day in the U.S. And you could actually buy tickets to go see this recording of the 25th anniversary production on a certain day. I think it was St. Paddy's Day in like 2020. And I went with like five friends of mine to the AMC at Mayfair to see this on the big screen. And it was just kind of cool because it was like the history of Riverdance, but it was also the show with new music. They came out with a new soundtrack. They completely redid the score, new costumes, new set, new everything. And I just love that after 35 years, that show is still going strong and how they just keep evolving that show. And it has a wonderful storyline, you know. So.
Well, thanks so much for calling, Brian, and thank you for sharing your story of hearing Irish music and Irish dance for the first time. It is, first of all, going to Riverdance because they mic the floors is you will hear that it like from the back of your chest down to the toes on your feet. It really rocks. Now, my connection to Riverdance is if you've been listening since the beginning of the show, and don't worry if you missed the start of the show, you can always check that out at civicmedia.us/shows. All of our old shows you can find there, also on Spotify and Apple Pods. Here's my connection to Riverdance. If you heard me at the beginning of the show talking about going to Irish fiddle lessons with this then yet soon to be, she wasn't quite yet world famous, but a now world famous Irish fiddler by the name of Eileen Ivers. She taught, I think, a week's worth of group classes out of UWM, and I went to those. Eileen Ivers first became famous. She had her own group, but then she became the featured fiddler for Riverdance. You may have, in fact, seen her, Brian, from Milwaukee, because she is famous for her electric violin that is blue. It is really cool. I actually got to play on her famous blue electric violin when I was taking classes with her. And certainly the couple of times that I saw Riverdance here in the States, she was playing, and it was such a treat to see her. I even got to speak with her once and say, hey, you're not going to remember me. I was a 14-year-old kid back then, but you taught me some Irish fiddling. It was very, very special for me. One of the interesting things about my Irish ancestry is how closely it tracks American Irish history, right? Those two gentlemen, my great-great-great-grandfathers, both were farmers in Ireland. And likely when they came here, when you think that Hugh Hickey continued to farm, he may have raised some sheep here in Wisconsin. And John Hayes, we believe, did some farming, but also became a laborer. And we were talking about that with Corey Webster of the Irish Heritage Center here in the Milwaukee area, that the Irish here in the United States often did many of the jobs that no one else would do. So that certainly was borne out in my own family tree. I'm going to share a little bit more of my mom's tips on uncovering some genealogy, some sources that are around Wisconsin that you may want to check out as we continue this celebration of St. Patrick's Day here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked right here. You want to share a story? Please do. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. We'll be back with more in just a moment right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Ready. While the teams get ready to choose their top draft pick, you can help Mino and the Mayor choose their top craft pick.
Northeast Wisconsin is home to amazing breweries, wineries, cideries, and distilleries, and we need your help picking the best.
We've drafted 10 of our favorites, but which local craft beverage creator will go to number one? That's up to you. Top craft pick creators include Kerrigan Brothers Winery in Kakana, Stillman Brewing Company in Green Bay, Old Station 31 Spirits in Dale, and Old Bavarian Brewing Company in Appleton. Vote for your favorite now by logging on WISS.FM and click on Mino and the Mayor's Top Craft Pick. When you vote, you'll enter a random drawing to win $250 in gift cards from participating craft creators. Don't wait. Voting ends Friday, April 18th. Log on WISS.FM and click on Mino and the Mayor's Top Craft Pick and vote right now. Mino and the Mayor's Top Craft Pick, drafting Northeast Wisconsin's finest one sip at a time. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, he would not be negotiating with the GOP if he was Wisconsin's sitting senator.
I want to clarify, like, I'm always happy to negotiate in good faith, but we're talking about a party that's not acting in good faith. We shouldn't be in a position where we're throwing a life raft to somebody who was hell-bent on sinking the entire ship.
Not something I want to be involved in.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Allbus Show.
Let's go to Ollie in the North Woods. Ollie, hiccups or gas, what's worse?
Well, I'd like to frame my answer in the form of a sports. It depends upon whether you're a passer or a receiver.
That's great. Whether you're the passer or the receiver, that's the best line of the day.
The Todd Allbus Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
St. Patrick's Day, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I might have introduced myself before as Maggie Hayes and the Maggie Hayes Show. That is because in my family's genealogy, the Hayes family did come to the United States and eventually Wisconsin from Ireland. So I thought that would be a bit of fun to introduce myself to each and every one of you this afternoon. Again, that Hayes family coming through New York, landing in New York in and around 1835, as best we can tell. And I think I called it Convent Garden. That's incorrect. The place that they came through is a place called Castle Garden. This was a place for processing immigrants before Ellis Island was opened. It was called Castle Garden. And I have this quote from Harper's Weekly back in 1882 that I think speaks in a lot of ways to the Irish immigrant experience during that time. And the potato famine didn't really hit until the 1840s. So both on my Hayes and Hickey sides of the family, they came before that. And by the way, just a note on the potato famine, as Corey Webster from the Irish Cultural Heritage Center in Milwaukee pointed out, the reason that people were starving to death in Ireland during the potato famine is that no one owned their own land. They all were tenants, and they were all required to turn over what they grew to their British lords that owned the land that they were permitted to lease and farm. So at the time, Ireland was an exporter of its foodstuffs to Britain. And the only thing that really sustained a lot of working poor Irish folk were potatoes, because the lords and the ladies, the upper classes, didn't want to eat potatoes. So when this fungus came through and wiped out the potato crops, they were left with nothing to eat. They also had no voice in the government. They were considered second class. And the government did nothing in the face of mass starvation. The Irish were also second in number only to the British in terms of the folks that originally colonized the United States. So going back into the 1700s and throughout the 1600s. So they're since the beginning of settlement in these United States, in America, what became the U.S., there were always a number of Irish people. But when people again started starving and came over in overwhelming numbers, starting in the 1840s through the 1850s and so on, that is when the discrimination against Irish became very widespread. It's also worthy of note that often Irish folks and African Americans were pushed into the same neighborhoods. And over time, were effectively Irish and Black folks were often pitted against each other. All of these things repeat multiple times throughout history, right? The most recent immigrant, the biggest wave of immigrants, those are who get looked down upon. Oh, and if we can make the lowest rung on the white immigrant ladder hate the Black or brown person, then we'll try to exploit that to keep them hating each other and not paying attention to the folks that really have the power and money. So I wanted to share this quote from Harper's Weekly. This is from May 27th, 1882. Speaking about Castle Garden, where my Hickey ancestor, my great-great-great-grandfather, Hugh Hickey, came through in the late 1830s, most likely. Here's the quote. "It has always been great enough to enable everybody to understand the position of that poor exile of Erin," meaning the poor that came from Ireland. And then they're going to talk about a specific person. "That exile of Erin who went up to be examined for a teacher in the public schools." So someone applying for a job to be a teacher who's Irish. "And being asked who discovered America was not at all clear. But being asked where the discovered landed, answered with triumphant promptitude, Castle Garden." So a little hard to follow because it's old timey. But what does this say? Hey, the poor person who had come, who was Irish, who came to the United States, wanted to be a public school teacher, applied for the job. They were getting quizzed to make sure they could do the job. They didn't know who discovered America, but when asked where the immigrants landed, they said not Plymouth Rock, but shared of their own experience Castle Garden, the place that they and probably much of their family came through when they immigrated from Ireland. Very, very interesting stuff. The largest ethnic group that came through Castle Garden specifically were Germans, followed next by the Irish, the English, the Swedish, and then Italians and Scottish, etc. Today, about 20% of Americans can trace their ancestry to someone who came through Castle Garden. Think about that. 20% of us can trace our ancestry to someone who came through Castle Garden. We have more in common than you ever may think. When we come back, we're going to talk about an ancient Irish sport, hurling, on this special edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. I am the Maggie Hayes Show on this very beautiful St. Patrick's Day. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more talk of the hurling after these brief messages. We'll be right back.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Net and Air on Air.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Severson. Looks like the ceasefire in Gaza is over, at least temporarily, because Israel is ramping up attacks all over Gaza by its air force. Because, says Prime Minister Netanyahu, Hamas has refused to release hostages and rejected all offers at talks in Qatar. A federal judge demands written answers to his questions from Justice Department lawyers at a Washington hearing today. This over Judge James Boasberg ordering a stop Saturday to the weekend deportation of what the administration calls dangerous Venezuelan criminal gang members. They were flown to El Salvador. Of the judge's order, White House official Stephen Miller.
To put the lives in danger of the Homeland Security personnel on those aircraft.
ACLU lawyers suing over the Trump claims of authority under a 1798 Alien Enemies Act. A federal appeals court has denied a request from the Trump administration to temporarily stop a court order that required reinstatement of thousands of government employees. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
March Madness is here. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the brackets are out. The Badgers play in Denver Thursday afternoon at 12:30 against Montana in the Ball Arena in Denver for the opening round of the NCAA basketball tournament. Marquette is going back to the dance. They face New Mexico Friday night in Cleveland. Head coach Shaka Smart.
This is a date that, as a basketball player or a basketball coach, you have circled on your calendar way before the season even starts. And it's something like 18% of teams end up playing in the NCAA tournament. So we don't take for granted even being in the NCAA tournament. This is really an acknowledgement today of the fact that our guys earned the right to be in the tournament, and now it's all about what we do with it.
NBA, the Bucks losing to the Thunder 121-105. Damian Lillard on how the Thunder were different than the team they beat in the NBA Cup last December.
I just think, you know, obviously they are who they are. They defend, you know, they move the ball, they got a deep team, and I just thought that we played a better game the first time.
That's Damian Lillard with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Despite some well-reviewed films, it was a pretty lackluster weekend at the box office. The weekend proved to be the lowest grossing theater totals of the year so far, with prognosticators surprised that a spring break weekend at the box office came in even lower than Super Bowl weekend by about $1 million. Novocaine led the way with a little more than $8 million at the gate. The film stars Jack Quaid as a man who does not feel pain while trying to rescue his kidnapped girlfriend. Last week's champ, Mickey 17, finished in second place with $7.5 million and $33 million for the two-week total. Steven Soderbergh's new spy thriller, Black Bag, finished with $7.5 million, but on about 1,100 less screens than Mickey 17. Rounding out the top five are Captain America, Brave New World, which pulled in over $5 million, and The Day the Earth Blew Up, the first Looney Tunes movie ever made for a theatrical release, with a disappointing just over $3 million. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your Fox Valley forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear and a low around 36. A bit breezy on your Tuesday with a high near 51 under partly sunny skies. Chance of rain Tuesday night, a low near 37. Rain for Wednesday and rain mixing with snow Wednesday night. Afternoon highs in the 40s.
Currently, 46 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
L.A. Tom, L.A., what do you got for us?
We do have a woman problem in this country. There is an issue there that needs to be solved if we are ever to have a female president.
Look at Mexico has a president. You know, Margaret Thatcher. I mean, it's just all over the world. I mean,
you have to remember Margaret Thatcher. They had queens.
We have Lindsey Graham. Come on.
Wow, that's true.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
Will Westmoreland is joining us now. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri.
This is an 80-20 Republican area down here. You can't throw a rock without hitting a Republican. And I still know all the guys I graduated with. So I always ask, don't admit you were wrong, just admit you were lied to. That's a lot easier to do. If you just admit you were lied to, you can get over here with us and start working to fight the problem.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Up North News creator and editor Christina Laurie. Then Civic Media Sports Authority Mike Clemens joins the show to discuss the NCAA tournament. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. My name is Maggie Hayes. You're listening to The Maggie Hayes Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Not really my name is Maggie Dawn, but my family name, being from County Cork, is Hayes. And I'm really excited to bring two people. I'm going to start with you, Ben. He is with the Madison Hurlers team, Ben Cottrell. Turns out your family's also from County Cork.
Yeah, Maggie, I'm born and raised in Cork and been in Madison for the last 7 years and been playing with Madison Hurling Hailstone or Hurling Club of Madison with those 7 years. And I just want to give a shout out to all my family back in Cork who are listening in and have sent on the show to many family and relations. So big shout to them and up the Rebels.
I love it, Ben. Hello to everyone in County Cork and Ireland and beyond. I hope you tune in every day. I will stop with my terrible Irish accent because now we have a legitimate one. But again, my family also from County Cork in Ireland. I also want to welcome Michaela Kolstock, also playing with the Madison Hurling team. Welcome, Michaela.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's start with the beginning. What is hurling and how long has it been around? Because this answer is so cool.
Oh, it's been around thousands of years. It even predates Christianity, I believe. So it's a different sort of religion. But in Madison, actually, the hurling and football have been, well, mainly hurling has been in the city of Madison with the last 18 years. It was formed on St. Patrick's Day 2007 by Jason, John, and John Kenny and Bill Jones, who are all listening into the show today as well. So big shout out to those guys for setting it up back 18 years ago today.
Well, to Jason and John Kenny and Bill Jones, happy anniversary to the Madison Hurling team. What a wonderful bit of Irish culture to share, especially here in a place like Wisconsin. Now, is the Madison Hurling Club like the Milwaukee Hurlers where it is co-ed? Are you playing both men and women right now?
We do mix it up. We have a league that we have two leagues for indoor that we run over the winter just to keep us all some bit sane and get us out of the house.
Yes.
We have an A and a B league. The B league is co-ed and the A league is for season hurlers. So we're able to mix and match between the two. But in the last couple of years, and Michaela will lean on this a bit more, we've started seeing great numbers growing our Camogie team, and it really has blossomed over the last couple of years. Just a shout out on the hurling side of it, I think we have about 4 or 5 national championships in hurling, which is very big for a club in the Midwest. We often go to tournaments and play teams from Boston, San Francisco, a lot of like a hurling team in Madison, Wisconsin. It's crazy. So
yeah, they're like, where is that? Why are you better at this than we are? And that's the good Irish in Wisconsin. I love it. Michaela, so what is Camogie? Is it the same as hurling, but for women? Tell us more.
Yeah, so they are essentially the same sport. Back in the good old days, I guess you could say, there was some slightly different rules, but now the two sports are very well aligned. So for many of us ladies, we do a lot of the developmental co-ed, as Benji had mentioned. And just this year, new to 2025, we now have enough ladies to form an official Camogie team. We will be competing as Madison Camogie at tournaments this summer and at nationals, hopefully.
That's wonderful. Congratulations on that. I played rugby in college. And so very much, and we won a national championship and had the same experience that you all are describing when we would go to tournaments, first of all, no one knew who we were. And second of all, we were playing these well-established, well-stocked teams, basically from the coasts, right? Like that was the deal. So I have, you have a lot of respect and empathy from me over these airwaves. Again, this is an ancient, ancient game. Can you tell us, Ben, the basics? So we got to talk about what a hurley is and what the slitter is, because everybody's going, what's a hurley and what's a slitter right now? So do tell, Ben.
Yeah. Well, what I have here for those listening on the radio is it's not much use, but I have I stole this hurley from my son, who's 9 months and has it.
So your 9-month-old son has a hurley already. Am I getting this straight? Yeah. Yeah,
he's a late starter.
late starter.
Would have hoped
okay.
sooner. But, so it's basically it's a stick made of ash or else a fiberglass equivalent over here in the US, and it's kind of shaped like a flat spoon or a spatula. And you play it like you play lacrosse, but a lot less gear. You only have a helmet, and the focus of it is there's two teams like in soccer. And then we have uprights over the bar. So you score by two ways, by getting it into the goal like in soccer or like a field goal in Gaelic or in American football. And it's a very good physical game. By the look of it, it doesn't seem that there's too many rules. Though when you beat it down, there's an awful lot. So you can't throw the ball. You have to hand pass or you have to hit the ball off your hurley. And you can only take four steps, and otherwise you're balancing on it like an egg and spoon. So
yeah, I want to just tell people, I'm going to give folks, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see Ben balance the slitter on the hurley. So here's what these things are. The hurley is the stick that you use to whack the ball, which is also called a slitter. A hurley is shorter than a baseball bat, weighs less than a baseball bat, and has a flat end that is about, 5 inches wide, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm sure they don't measure it in inches, however. It's got a flat face. And so the slitter, then the ball, is approximately the size of a baseball, but has massive seams on it, really big seams, outer seams, external seams. So as Ben said, you score by either smacking the slitter with your hurley through the uprights, okay, or by slapping the slitter with your hurley into the net. Those are the two ways that you score. You can pass the slitter, but again, the important rule is if you're holding the slitter, you can only take four steps with it before you have to throw it up and bounce it on your hurley. Now, as a at least former has-been athlete, Michaela, I want to ask you, because I have a bunch of friends that play in the Milwaukee Hurling Club, and they dragged me out to some games. And because they knew I played rugby, they're like, Maggie, you should be able to do this. Come on, you used to play softball. So I tried to throw the slitter and hit it with the hurley, which I could do, but it went about like 3 feet and went bloop. And then I tried to run and throw the slitter up and balance it / bounce it on my hurley and looked like I had never played a single sport in my entire life. Were you a longtime hurling player? How did you get involved with this? And how did you, these are very specific skills. And oh, by the way, folks, like batters who are switch hitters in baseball, if you're a hurling player, you got to be able to smack the slitter both right-handed and left-handed. And by the way, it's sort of like a half chop, half swing. Correct anything I've gotten wrong, but I wanted to paint people a vibrant picture of pretty much how challenging this is.
Yeah, I've only been playing for about 4 years now. I came in with a softball background. And luckily, transitioning into Camogie was relatively okay, mainly because I tried football first, and then one of our Camogie gals, that Camogie is her heart and soul, Allie Kenny, shout out to Allie Kenny, she instantly grabbed me and was like, you're pretty athletic, we're going to have you try this sport too. And so our Camogie recruitment has been very much, hey, you're playing football, why not try to play Camogie as well. So I would say last year was probably like my holy cow, it all makes sense now year.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I'm always constantly improving. I can attest that it's such a fun sport. I would say that you don't really even necessarily have to have any like major skill, especially as ladies coming in, as long as you're willing to try and to have fun with it and to give it your all, we're going to make sure that you get right where you need to be and you'll fit right in.
It is a good time sport, much like rugby, much like Gaelic football. Like, there's a great camaraderie, great respect for anybody that plays. So, like, if you're randomly in Ireland and somebody figures out that you're a hurler, they're gonna be like, "Oh, hey, buddy, like, come hang out." Which I love about this sort of category of sports, folks. If you're just joining us, I got two very special guests today, both from the Madison Hurling Club, Ben Cottrell with family listening in County Cork. Hello to all of you and happy St. Patrick's Day, as well as Michaela Colstock, both of them playing with the Madison Hurling Club. Michaela now on a fully sided Camogie team, which is women's hurling. I forgot this analogy. If folks are listening and you know what a field hockey stick looks like, it kind of looks a little bit like that. The hurley does. I wanted to ask you, Ben, was this a family inherited tradition? Did your dad, was he a hurler? Was there an uncle? Did your mom hurl? And I don't mean hurl. I mean hurling. Did she play some hurling? How does one, unless you get recruited by Michaela because she sees you playing flag football or softball or something, how do you get sucked into the hurling culture and family?
It's very easy. It's very hard to avoid back in Ireland. My family played hurling. My father, my uncles played. My granduncles and grandfather played as well. And my sisters and cousins played. So really, it's kind of like basketball equivalent over here. Just growing up, you just play around. That's why I said, I was kind of half joking, half serious, that my son, who's 9 months, he's a late bloomer, because usually at home, as soon as you're around the place, a ball's thrown at you. But over here, how we're recruiting for men's is a lot of word of mouth, or when we're out and about, people sees us, or on our Facebook page as well. And we're always looking to get more and more both men and women to play our games.
Okay, so Michaela, if folks listening want to find out more about either the men's or women's hurling teams and the Hurling Club in Madison, where do they go to find that info?
Yeah, so you can find us on Facebook and or Instagram at Madison Hailstones GAA. You can directly DM or comment on a post. We are actively watching our social medias. We also are doing, and Ben, you'll have to potentially remind me what date it is, but we are taking over a Madison Forward game, and we'll be doing a halftime demonstration, which is another great way to come and kind of see what we do, especially if you're like, oh, like I've heard of this and I've watched videos and it looks scary and intimidating and I would like to see it in person or talk to people in person about it. That's an awesome opportunity to come chat with us.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to correct there? Did we get the dates right, or the date right for that event, Ben?
I believe so. And I do just want to convey kind of anyone who does come and wants to start learning, we have an awful lot of good teachers within our club, those who played the game in Ireland, though some who've been playing hurling for the last 18 years in the US. And it's probably easier for them to teach someone than it is, say myself. But anyone who'd like to come along, we're always doing demonstrations and trying to get people comfortable. We'll be training outdoors in the next couple of weeks on Thursday nights in U Bay for the men's from around 6 p.m. onwards. And we're always willing to take on more people, and there's a good social side too, which is very important.
I can't believe it. We are already out of time, everybody. Ben, shout out your family in County Cork.
Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Michaela, who would you like to say hello to on this fine St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, goodness. I would probably just give a shout out to all of the team members that are watching. yeah, if anybody's interested, come hang out with us at Gaelic Football or Camogie and Hurling. We're always having a good time.
A big thanks to Ben Cottrell and Michaela Kolstock of the Madison Hurling Club. Have a wonderful St. Patrick's Day to both of you. I hope to see you on the pitch soon. We'll be back with my final thoughts on this beautiful holiday. I finally cracked a Guinness, everybody. Woohoo! Happy St. Patrick's Day. Back with more in just a moment right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
Hey, it's Amanda, and we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be a little tricky. So here at WISS, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WISS.FM and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you've got an event to share, hit us up. Email info at WISS.FM. We can work together to have real news and great conversation while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
Wherever you are in Wisconsin, there's a free and confidential Aging and Disability Resource Center, ADRC, or Tribal Partner Agency. We're here for older adults, adults with disabilities, and your families. ADRCs are a bridge to support for benefits and financial assistance, transportation, in-home care, and more. Get to know your local ADRC and connect with resources today. Call toll-free 1-844-WIS-ADRC or go to findmyadrc.org. Paid for by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Tom from Monona. I love this one. He says, this is Tom. I like to rub my feet together and drink milk out of the cow. Listen, we'd all spoon ourselves if we could, just for some affection. But rubbing your feet together, as I mentioned last week, is the closest thing to self-cuddling. It's just a relaxing, and Tom wants to do that, apparently laying under the udder of a cow. That is the idea of a chill evening on Fat Tuesday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Musk is so arrogant that he is even intervening right here in the state of Wisconsin.
Republican Rep. Brian Steil said in a statement that Sanders was on a fear-mongering tour. Maybe he should be afraid when billionaires can buy the presidency, when billionaires can buy elections. I think that's a little scary. And
I think
we, the people, should do something about it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody. Big thanks to my last two special guests, Ben Cottrell and Michaela Kolstock of the Madison Hurlers, sharing some of an ancient Gaelic sport called hurling with all of us. It is a bunch of fun to watch. I have a number of friends that play on the Milwaukee hurling team, and it is a hangout. It is a damn good time. It is a fun sport to watch. You definitely want to check it out wherever you may be. Big thanks to all of them, and happy St. Patrick's Day to each and every one of you. And yeah, we took a little break from politics. Don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to talk about politics again. There'll be plenty to talk about, you know, like the Alien Enemies Act that's only ever been invoked when we've actually had a declared war, you know, things like that. We'll talk all about it tomorrow. We've got Diane from Madison texting in. She wanted to know a little bit more of some of the resources and places that my mom went when she started to look into our family's genealogy. I shared in this hour that I have two branches of my family on my mother's side that come from Ireland, the Hayeses and the Hickeys. The Hickeys from County Meath, north of Dublin, and the Hayeses primarily from County Cork. And yes, you can always start with 23andMe and FamilyTree.com and Ancestry and figure out what your blood tells folks about where you may be from. But primarily, my mom really used oral histories to get an idea of where to look. So by talking to her mother, some of her older aunts, she really established and wrote down a significant amount of our family's story. Where did they come into the country? For example, Hugh Hickey came through Canada. He didn't come directly to the United States. But the next place to go and look at are basically all of your vital records. So birth certificates, death certificates, marriage certificates, but also military records. These are really helpful. The National Archives here in the United States. You can also look for land deeds. If you know your family moved to a particular place, you know that there was some land in your family, call up that county's register of deeds. Ask, hey, are there any deeds in this name from this decade or a couple of decades with this last name on them? Now, not every county register of deeds has their documents in electronic form. Not all of them are searchable in electronic form. So my mom did a lot of traveling to places to actually go through documents, to look on microfiche. My gosh, I'm dating myself. Yeah, actually getting out the old marriage and death certificates and looking at stuff in microfiche. The other big category of documents that can be very helpful if you are interested in your family's genealogy are naturalization records. Back when my ancestors came here, the United States basically was like, if you show up, we'll eventually make you a citizen and we'll naturalize you. My ancestors did eventually have to apply for it. And they were before even the Ellis Island period of time. There was actually like more process involved from like the early 1800s through about the 1850s. There's less process. You just needed to be here for a certain amount of time, document that you were here and you would become naturalized as a citizen. But those naturalization records with the National Archives, again, military records with the National Archives, or you can contact the specific branch of the military that you think your ancestor may have served in. Other than governments, churches, synagogues, or other places of worship that your family that you know may have worshiped there, they often will have a record of a marriage, for example, or a birth. And also, my mom did contact, and she did this via snail mail back in the day. Via snail mail, she contacted a lot of churches and a number of government agencies in Ireland by writing them, hey, do you have records related to this family with this surname and first name, and looking at it that way. Here in the United States, the Church of Latter-day Saints, Mormons, have really, I mean, they are like the genealogists here, both in Salt Lake City, but I believe the Church of Latter-day Saints also has a genealogical library here in Milwaukee, So that's another thing to check out. So again, writing to churches or places of worship, writing to the government agencies, visiting, going there, National Archives. You can also write to cemeteries, see if they have a particular record of who is interned there. That can help a lot if you're trying to find out where an ancestor may have been buried. One of the challenges that my mother ran into was that some of our family's records were lost or destroyed because of the famine. This is often one of the stumbling blocks you'll run into. If you are interested in this stuff, my mom's biggest piece of advice was to go take a class on genealogy and sit down and talk to your elders. Sit and talk with people. It's the best source of your own family history. Because on today, we're all Irish. So my best St. Patrick's Day wishes to all of you and yours and your families, wherever you come from. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it's better when we stand together. As Americans, as immigrants, as Irish, German, Polish, Venezuelan, Mexican, Puerto Rican, Dominican, wherever you are from, let's stand together. Have a good one.
one new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. WISS.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Hopefully your St. Patrick's headache has gone away. We'll be discussing top broadband officials exiting the U.S. Department of Commerce. What it means for broadband in Wisconsin. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend, and then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is WISS Berlin-Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein-Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. A bloody, deadly end to the Gaza ceasefire just a few hours ago. What the Israeli prime minister calls expansive Israeli air attacks are being carried out all over Gaza. An Israeli official tells ABC News that mid-ranking Hamas military commanders, leadership officials, terrorist infrastructure is targeted. Retired U.S. Army general and former American NATO official Doug Lute.
It is a vivid reminder of just how delicate these ceasefires are. And not only the ceasefire here, but the ceasefire that might be in the works, for example, in Ukraine.
The reason for the attacks, says Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, is Hamas refusing to release hostages and rejecting all offers at talks in Qatar. A federal judge demands written answers to his questions from Justice Department lawyers who deny the administration defied that judge's order to stop the weekend deportation of what the administration calls dangerous Venezuelan criminal gang members. This is ABC News.